Thanks very much, sir. We're talking with Dave Gardner tonight. I wonder how it's all going to work out. Do you spend a lot of time wondering how it's all going to work out? No, there's not much point in worrying about stuff that's beyond your control, but we can all do our part. And so I'm going to press Dave Gardner on what we should do and maybe some things we can support. And don't forget, if you go to, I got a lot of screens up here, but then again, people have been saying that about me for a long time. Like, yeah, well, he's got a lot of screens up. He's got too many screens up all the time. Go to Dave Gardner's website. That's Gardner. Dave Gardner. Go to growthbusters.org, and when you go to the little radio code box, put in Coast to Coast, C-O-A-S-T, the number two, C-O-A-S-T, and you get 25% off of his film, Growth Busters, Hooked on Growth. You know, not every answer that we need is going to come from any one source. But as we go through this new year, we'll try and get a glimpse of the truth here and capture it. And we'll get a piece of the truth there and capture it. You know, the saying, the truth is out there. Now, that's true. But again, I think there are people in power who would just assume the truth remain out there. So it's our job as good little citizens of planet Earth. We're doing it for each other. We're doing it for our fellow Earthlings. We're not doing it for a government. I think we should keep in mind that this government works for us. Don't give it up. Maintain your control. You have more than you think. All right. We've got another hour. Yeah, a little bit less than an hour, but the majority of an hour with Dave Gardner left to go. So do stand by. Make yourself a proper cup of tea. I'm going to go get mine while we do this quick little break on Coast to Coast AM. Dave Gardner, what do you see as the future of mankind? Do you think we'll have to eventually leave this planet and start? we're going to cling to the capitalist paradigm. Communism ain't working. It's too miserable. There's not enough stuff. We're not happy. There's no motivation to do anything. You know. I just triggered another question. Is there anything that we can do? Obviously, this overconsumption has been caused by greed. But certainly a case could be made for greed being a great motivator right down to the primitive level, even to the animal level. I mean, actual animals, they behave in greedy fashion. They display this almost the same personality traits as human beings. And observable those traits are. Is there any way out of this? Will the human psyche permit us to correct any of this, or do we just need to go on off the lemming cliff and start over? I mean, is it just build it up and tear it down, build it up and tear it down?
Well, that's certainly a matter of opinion, and there are many whose opinion is that we are too far gone and that we're too flawed and that we're destined to crash. I don't hold that view. I'm really optimistic. Otherwise, I'd be busy partying and while I could, instead of trying to actually make a difference. I started Growth Busters Project, set it up as a nonprofit, and devote, I work too hard. I'm actually still on the treadmill in so many ways because there's just so much good work to be done, but it's really fulfilling work. People, I think we just have to get back and back to the point where we expected more of ourselves. You mentioned virtuous leadership in the last hour, and we didn't really explore that, but there, we are virtuous. We all are, and we've been told for so long that we're not, that we are just greedy people and we'll just do whatever a fast buck will compel us to do. And I see a lot of signs that that's become true. And I think we've let it become true just because we've heard it so many times that that's what we've come to believe. So I think we have to expect more of ourselves. And we're very capable of it. A lot of people who are aware of the, just how growth addicted the system is, think that we have no choice but to somehow sit back and wait for the system to change. And certainly the system has to change. If we all change our own lives, that alone isn't enough, but I do think if we lead the charge, if we change our own lives, that will force the system to change. We can starve the system of its drug and move our entire country, our entire civilization in a, you know, in a more positive direction.
All right. Then I'll tell you what. Now I don't want to just I don't want to beat a dead horse here, because we've touched on this two or three times. But what areas of growth would you like to see? Not necessarily. I don't even want to phrase it that way. Maybe you would like to see it, but maybe you think it's necessary. What areas of growth, or you know, whatever you might call it, if our GDP is not growing, And if an increase in GDP does not necessarily translate to a happier and more prosperous individual, apart from the fact that he or she is either employed or not employed, then what areas of unsustainable growth would you start with as far as eliminating it, or certainly scaling it back to where it's that scaling back could be felt?
I think a lot of it would happen naturally if enough of us can bring ourselves to cut our work hours in half and share our job with somebody else out there who's unemployed today. You don't even have to think that hard about it. If you can get your life scaled back to that point and do that, then a lot of things just naturally happen. You're going to drive less. You're going to fill up your car with gas less. You're going to go to the mall less. So your footprint on the planet will be smaller. You'll spend more time playing Monopoly or Bananagrams or Scrabble or charades than you will going to the mall for entertainment. And so there's all kinds of there's a cascade of good impacts when you do that.
Well, you know, Dave, now a person could easily come back and say, no, wait a minute, Dave. I'm already at the end of my string. I can't go sharing my job with somebody. Are we saying that the reason that we're in this spot is because we bought too much stuff and obligated ourselves to too much stuff? I mean, car payments and house payments and blah, 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 blah. I mean, is that what it is? Just spend less and you won't need to make as much?
Well, that is. You know, we all kind of bought into it because, you know, about 30 years ago, the benefits of growth really stopped. They stopped because we had filled up the planet. And so what happened for the next 30 years is we maintained the illusion of the benefits of growth by going into debt. Everyone was betting that next year things will, you know, get back to normal and growth will actually throw off real benefits. So we just borrowed against the future expectation that things would continue the way they did in the past. And, you know, things don't always continue the way they did in the past. So we've got 30 years of sort of digging ourselves into a hole. And I'm not going to pretend it's easy to undo the damage we did. You know, if you've got a mortgage, if you've got a car payment, if you happen to own, you know, if you're a snowbird and you own a house in Wisconsin and another house in Scottsdale, you know, you've got to figure out a way to unload some of that before you can afford probably to scale back. But I think it's a good experiment. It's a good goal to try. And that's the first step. I've forgotten. It seemed like you had a compound question there, John.
Well, you know, and it goes back to the, well, I'm thinking that all these little pathways and trails and roads and, you know, goat and jeep trails lead to Rome, so to speak. When you see the advance of globalism, and you see that this new world order is actually a real thing, and that there is a plan for the behavior patterns of great big masses of people, do you think a global agenda is what's going? In other words, is there any possibility that anything good could come out of the new world order? I mean, forget about the fat cats are always going to be there and they're going to be fine. And there are going to be people at the top that have money and there'll be people that we resent for that. And I mean, just kind of take the wealth factor of our betters, our leaders, take that out of it for a second. Do you think it would require almost a coordinated global initiative to bring this about in time to avert some catastrophic human tragedy?
I don't have faith in that, John. I think that you know, you mentioned Agenda 21. I'm in favor of avoiding a lot of that. I think a lot of that is a response to or a symptom of an unwillingness to address the very uncomfortable topic of population growth. Agenda 21 is designed to try to make the best of a bad situation, which is continued population growth. It's based on not believing that we're smart enough and good enough that we can actually figure out that we've grown to an unsustainable size of population. And the best thing we can do is make our own decisions. You know, nobody wants the government to tell them to interfere in their reproductive freedom. There may come a day where the government will, if we don't, you know, get busy and start making better decisions ourselves. But I think we're capable of that. And as we do that, we'll see, you know, we'll be able to preserve the parts of our lives that we really love. You know, I love being able to walk back out on my deck and cook, you know, and cook burgers every now and then on the deck and not have a bunch of people living on top of me. And actually, yeah, I like to eat meat. I don't eat it very often because it's, unfortunately, with 7 billion people on the planet, eating beef 7 days a week, it turns out that's irresponsible. But I'm not willing to give it up just so that I can avoid the uncomfortable topic of overpopulation.
Right. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah, so it gets, you know, so it keeps on coming back to population in so many ways because people are a lot less willing to give up what they consider their comforts of modern technology and the benefits of the binge that we've been on. But if you're not willing to give that up, then you need to be willing to give up having 8 kids or 11 kids or 6 kids. And if you love those kids, you will do it. And I'm not suggesting that anyone tell you how many kids you can have. I'm suggesting that, you know, that you have, you know, arm yourself with good information and you just make a really loving, compassionate decision about that. Gosh, you had asked something else that I really didn't want to leave out. Globalization. Is it going to take some kind of a mass organized effort to solve these problems? I actually think it's the opposite. And in fact, I've seen some really promising role models out there. And the opposite of globalization is localization. And especially in a post-peak oil world where we have to figure out ways, less energy-intensive ways to live, ways to burn less oil, less coal, the way to do that isn't a global economy where you, you know, where you pick apples in one country, you ship them halfway around the world to be washed and waxed, and then you ship them back the other halfway around the world again. It's not even, you know, where you grow all your produce in California and the average groceries in your grocery store, you know, traveled 1,500 miles. We're not going to be able to afford to live like that because eventually the price of oil is going to be so high that you won't be able to afford, you know, cabbage or lettuce or zucchini from California if you don't live in California. And in the Growth Busters film, one of the role models that I share a little bit about is called Transition Towns. And it's a worldwide movement that it's springing up from the grassroots, and it's people in communities around the world who are getting together and trying to figure out, okay, what is a non-globalized, non-energy-intensive world and economy look like? How can we still have good lives without wasting so much energy? And they're figuring it out. They don't have all the answers, but it's things like getting back to using durable goods instead of being a throwaway society. You know, you buy quality goods, tools that will last. You borrow and share. You loan tools to people. Not every household has to have a garage full of every power tool that gets used, you know, once or twice a year. You grow food locally. Maybe you like beekeeping, and so you make honey and you trade honey with the people down the street who have chickens in their backyard, and they give you eggs. And what you do when you're doing that is you're cutting out the big corporate growth boosters, you're cutting them out. You're not supporting that system. You're not burning a lot of fossil fuels in order to meet your basic needs. And it turns out it's a whole lot of fun. Instead of slaving away at the office working on something that you really don't care about that much from a paycheck to waste on expensive food that traveled 1,500 miles, you actually get to spend some of your time working in the garden or learning how to raise chickens or learning how to keep bees and make honey.
Yeah, you're really talking about rolling back our head trip back to the, almost the, I'm thinking like 30s and excluding the World War II part.
It sounds a little bit like that, but people are really enjoying it. You know, it's just because we've advanced beyond some things doesn't necessarily mean that, it was a good move. There are some things in our history we don't ever want to repeat, and there may be some things in our history that turned out to be pretty good.
Don't you think something like this would have to be promoted pretty heavily to make it fashionable? You know, fashion's about blending in. Style's about standing out. Don't you think to get enough people to want to join this, wouldn't it have to be promoted as a, the new direction of civilization and actually get people excited about it? I don't know. I'm not sure they're going to. Seems like the civilization is so uptight as it is. It's going to, they go on a 2-week vacation. It takes the first week just to relax enough to realize they're on vacation. And then they got the stress of what's waiting for them when they come back. So I'm just wondering if the society is so jacked up as it is, they're going to have to be trained how to lay back a little bit.
Well, I think that's a definite hurdle in our path. And I don't think it's something, I would hate to even think we have to turn to Madison Avenue to try to solve that problem, because Madison Avenue created so many of our wants and desires that we have today. But, if you visit transitionnetwork.org or transitionculture.org or transitionus.org, you can kind of plug into this community, and you'll find that in their own way, which is a very low-key, unintrusive way, they are promoting, they're sharing, best practices with each other around the world, and they're supporting each other. But it makes it slow, because mostly what it is it's a neighbor watches a family and sees how much fun they're having, living a little closer to the land. And, you mentioned it's almost like going back, or it is very much like going back in history to when we were all living closer to the land. And when you think about it, there's no greater security than that. I've been thinking about that a lot, because I don't think that economic growth is going to continue. And yet I have a little bit of money that I have set aside, supposedly that was going to help me retire. Unfortunately, I blew through a lot of that making this film, but I have a little bit left, and I don't want to have it invested in betting that growth is going to continue. So I pulled it out of the stock market. Well, what do I do with it to protect the value of it? And I haven't done this because I'm imperfect and I'm still on the journey, but I honestly believe that the only really safe investment you can make today is in land, is in a place where you can grow your own food. Because if things don't go well, the stores at the grocery shelf, or the shelves in the grocery store, rather, are going to be empty in a matter of days. And, you can't live without food and water. Those are your basic requirements. So having a little bit of land provides you with real security, and knowing how to grow food is another source of security. And the young people, a lot of college students, get that, and they're all learning, that, and when they graduate from college, instead of going to work on Wall Street or at a law firm, a lot of them, go intern on an organic farm for a year, so they know how to feed themselves.
Not a bad idea. I wonder how many people remember how to can any fruits or vegetables. All right, Dave Gardner, it's a real pleasure speaking with you tonight. We'll be back for our final segment quite shortly on Coast to Coast AM. Just a quick shout out to everybody, if you'll pardon that unfortunate expression. Thank you very much for becoming a Coast Insider, because as the landscape of radio shifts, you shift with it, because sometimes it's just not possible to stay up as late as the program runs, but you don't want to miss it, so you get 3 years of archive shows. It's inexpensive. I'm sure you will like it. Any little technical difficulties or anything else you experience with it will be addressed by the one and only Lex Lonehood, and he will get you sorted, and you'll have 3 years of archive shows for your listening pleasure at any hour of the day or night you happen to find yourself awake instead of swilling coffee and tea at this hour of the morning. Happy first Saturday night of the new year. It's just an absolute total blast, an honor, and a real privilege to be able to sit in this chair on board the mighty mothership and for a whole year now. So thank you very much for allowing me to remain here. We'll conclude our conversation tonight with Dave Gardner when we come back. His website is growthbusters.org. So check it out and stand by for him. About a minute and a half. We'll be back. This is Coast. John B. Wells in with you here with Dave Gardner. Dave, I just have to ask if what compels people who cannot afford to have children to continue to not only have children, but to continue to have children? I mean, it takes a license to catch a fish or to hunt a deer or something, but anybody can go out there and have a kid. And if they find themselves unable to support the child, then they'll reach out for public assistance, and the cycle just goes on. How do you convince not only the people within our own country, but the burgeoning population of other countries where, you know, well, it's unless you have a child or two or three or four, then you're just not really, you're not much of a man there. It's key to your being recognized as a real no-kidding man if you father a bunch of kids. You just have to do this. It becomes a cultural thing. How do you break that?
Well, you hit on an interesting subject. There are a number of different reasons why people do choose to have children, even when they can't afford it, or even if they've been, you know, informed that the world can't handle a lot of kids. And you're right, there are cultures where it is really related to, you know, to a man's manhood in that culture. I learned a lot about that in an interview I did for the film with the smartest man about population, a guy named Bill Ryerson, who heads up the Population Media Center. Bill's interview in my film is really quite informative, and I've got a few additional clips of Bill on my Growthbuster YouTube channel. So if people are really interested in this particular part of the subject, I would encourage them to explore that. And check out Population Media Center as well. What Bill is doing is he is working hard on trying to change slowly from within the cultures where they're typically male-dominated cultures, because most of the time the women in those cultures don't really want to just be baby-making machines, but the women don't have the power to do anything about that, unfortunately. So he's working on that, and working on it in a really gentle way with soap operas, where his organization helps people in those countries get into production on radio. In a lot of cases, it's radio serial dramas that model different kind of behaviors and actually have conversations about these subjects. And they're finding that they are actually making a difference. Bill is quick to point out that making family planning available worldwide is a really worthy cause, but it only gets us so far. It only gets us about halfway, because if a culture has access to family planning, but it's a male-dominated society, and the men think having 9 kids is is the same thing as in the U.S. having a Dodge Ram pickup truck, then you've got some work to do. I think in the U.S., teen pregnancy is a huge issue, and I don't know all the answers about why teens get pregnant. Sometimes it's just accidental. Sometimes it's, you know, they don't have anything better to do. Sometimes some people just think that's what you do, you know? That's my job as a woman, is to make babies. So certainly education and economic opportunities for women help in that department.
You know, it's amazing. Now, this is a sort of a radical swing, but it seems as though this big rush to into capitalistic chaos. I mean, I don't have a problem with capitalism. I have a problem with any system that's unbridled. And I have a problem with every system that subjugates the human spirit and restricts the freedom of the human being. But I remember that I just happened to catch this. It was on the middle of the night. It was about like the father of advertising. And I want to say it was Ted Bates. And it was about the Anison commercial. That was the most effective television campaign. It was the one of the earliest and best examples of a concerted television marketing campaign, where you've got these cartoons of the tension banging and all of this, and they've just doubled their sales and then tripled their sales. It was just ridiculously effective. And I believe it was Mr. Bates who said, I'm sure a Coast listener will straighten me out, and please do. I hate being wrong, and it happens all the time. You know, if you want that new car, buy it. If you want that fabulous house, buy it. If your wife wants that mink stole, get it for her, you know. Get yourself so hopelessly into debt that you just can't believe that you did it, because you will recognize levels of productivity and achievement in your life you never imagined were possible. And I really think that a lot of people bought into that when, you know, advertising and television was relatively, you know, new after the World War II years. And that big boom that starts in 46 and rolls through the 50s, you know, and in the meantime, there are all these conflicts around the world. It's like, no, we're America. We beat Japan. We beat Germany. We beat everybody. We're number one. We're going to do this thing. We've got lots of room, and we have industrial power now, so let's get it on. It's like, and I think we just forgot to shut it off. We just never reached that point where it's like, you know, where a machine that you would buy, like a car, was so well made that it was a thing to be appreciated and enjoyed for, you know, the majority of a person's lifetime. Instead, it's turned into, I mean, as soon as they're handing you the keys to drive off in your new car, they go, come see me in a few months. Well, you see what next year's model is like. It's going to make this one you're driving off in there look like a real piece of junk. It's like, well, thanks. I just dropped 50 grand on it, and you're telling me it's junk already, because the one coming out next year is going to be so much better. So
we turned to advertising to put to work all of that industrial capacity that we no longer needed, you know, creating fighter planes and all of the instruments of war after World War II, and to put people to work. And it worked. It worked really well. But you're right. We never stopped. We decided that GDP growth was the holy grail, and the advertising business did a great job of making sure we wanted to throw away what we bought this year and buy the new model next year. And we got carried away. We absolutely got carried away.
Well, you know, we've had some folks on the show before that just talked about really localizing everything to where it's like, look, it's the neighborhood, you know, energy replenishment center, and it's the neighborhood vegetable co-op, and just kind of, I mean, it really is sort of a, it's communistic in that, you know, everyone shares and everything. However, there's this problem that, well, the surgeon down the street that can remove your appendix that's about to kill you is probably worth more heads of lettuce than Bob over there who is shoeing the horses. Even though those horses need to be shod, I think the surgeon probably needs to pay a little more. I mean, that thing about from each according to his talents and to each according to his needs, that sounds really good, except that some areas of expertise would seem to be more important than others. So how do you get people to psychologically accept their position in life? That I remember seeing a little girl on a TV show, a black and white TV show many, many years ago, talking to another kid, and she says, oh, well, what does your father do? And it's like, oh, my dad's like an aeronautical engineer. And she goes, oh, my dad's only a doctor. It's like, I'm thinking, only a doctor? You know, during the 90s when I saw this, it's like doctors were reveling in that God syndrome. I mean, it was really being done for them through the advertising media. And I really wonder, Dave, you know, and you and I have been associated with the advertising business, and certainly if advertising is simply putting forth en masse the ideas of a company or even an individual, then We've been involved in that for many, many years, and we've seen how effective it is in even promoting products that are really not necessarily that good. And people buy them anyway.
Yeah, I really regret that I became a, kind of a master of spin. You know, I spent most of my career being a spin doctor, and it's been really hard to become more authentic in the way I communicate. It's an ongoing challenge for me. But in answer to this varying value of what people do, I think, again, I think some of the solution is going to be forced upon us. Today, a gallon of gas, you can go out and buy a gallon of gas for less than $3 in most places in the United States, and it will do the work. I mean, an amazing amount of manual labor. And that's amazing. I've forgotten the calculation of how many days you would have to work to with your hands to equal the work that can be done just on a gallon of gasoline. But when a gallon of gasoline costs $10, and it will, in our lifetime, we'll get to that point, then suddenly manual labor has a whole lot more value. And I think we're going to see a return to that, and especially with the scarcity of food, if population growth does continue, food is going to become a whole lot more valuable. So farmers, people who work with their hands, people who can farm without needing to burn a lot of gasoline, running big equipment, those people are going to be worth a lot more. So I think the plastic surgeon that can give you a facelift, you know what? Not so much. So I think we'll see some equalization.
You know, Stephen sent an email that said he agrees with a lot of what you say, but what about America going into a negative population growth rate if it were not for immigration? Do you see any credence to that assertion?
Well, it probably would. You know, we're the fastest growing developed nation in the world, and we ought to be embarrassed about that. And we are. Almost all of our growth now can be attributed to immigration and the children of immigrants. We would be pretty close to replacement level. We'd have a stable population if it weren't for that. And it's kind of sad that our growth addiction causes us to entice people from other countries to move here, chasing this phony American dream that's not serving us very well. And then what do? We exploit them in order to grow our economy. So it's a really goofy system. And population decline would be the best news that we could have. Now, the growth boosters are busy out there issuing propaganda daily to convince us that population decline is horrible, that it's to be feared, and that we better get busy popping out new consumers and laborers. That's ridiculous. That's a Ponzi scheme. And, you know, the first thing you do when you find yourself in a hole is you stop digging. If we're in overshoot and there aren't the resources to support continued growth, you know, we've got to just go through the adjustments of population decline. And there'll be some adjustments because it'll be more challenging to fund Medicare, more challenging to fund Social Security. But every Ponzi scheme must eventually come to an end. And the sooner we end it, the easier it will be to end it.
You know, this in the end, I suppose it all comes down to government, because I think people want to be led. They want to be given direction. If they're left to their own devices, you know, they can create and so forth. But as far as being able to, you know, congeal into a social or civilizational movement, it seems like there's going to have to be some attention from the top, and not, I don't know. I have grave concerns that anything can be done with this civilization, given the current state of its government.
Well, and that's why that's the one reason why I don't think we can depend on the government. What's that old saying that a politician, you know, looks out there to see which way the parade's going and then jumps in front of it. So it looks like he's leading it. You know, we have absolutely got to to show our elected officials where we want to go, because they don't get it. They think we want to go. They think we're selfish. They think that they need to promise us the world. They think they need to lie to us in order to keep their jobs. And we've got to show them that that's not the case. So that's why we need the local and the personal changes in our lives in order to inspire the systemic change that we're going to need, in my view.
Listen, it's been spectacular being able to talk to you for these, well, you know, the greater part of the 3 hours. We have a lot of breaks, and thank God for that, because otherwise we wouldn't be able to remain on the air. But in the last couple of minutes here, what would you just like to leave the people with? Anything you like, and the more radical, the better. That generally stimulates the old synapses more than anything else. Radical thought rather than, you know, same stuff. You can get that on any channel.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity, and I've told people that the Growthbusters film absolutely turns our world upside down, and it challenges everything we came to believe. I believe that the worship of growth everlasting is the most powerful and widespread religion on earth, and it's a tough one to beat. Religious faith is hard to shake just with logic and facts. But we do have to get over it. Perpetual population growth and economic growth are just not possible. So the longer we fight that truth, the more resources and time we will waste that we could be spending on figuring out, you know, what true progress is going to look like in this century. This is a new century. Let's get over the binge of the old century, and start figuring out how we can really live fulfilled, promising lives, and that leave a world worth inheriting for our kids. I started out just to make one movie, but you know, I got a lot of work to do, because this is getting the world unhooked from growth addiction is going to be a full-time job for the rest of my life, and probably then some. So I would encourage people to explore growthbusters.org, explore our YouTube channel, explore the links. We try to provide a lot of information to help people to learn more, because I don't have all the answers. I'm just one of the messengers. I'm just the guy who shows up in the middle of the night with a glass of cold water to splash in your face and wake you up and say, hey, it's not what it seems. Check it out and explore the possibilities. You know, this is my nonprofit is very scrappy little nonprofit. I was paid nothing during the last 12 months for the full-time work I've done. So we appreciate charitable donations. We appreciate volunteers getting involved. And we appreciate the people who buy the movie and show it to their mayor, to their senator, to their local journalists, and to their neighbors and friends. Because once you see the movie, you will never look at the world quite the same way again. So I want to remind people that we are given the 25% discount to listeners tonight if they use the discount code COAST, and then the number 2, and then COAST, when they order the Growthbusters DVD.
Excellent. Dave, a real pleasure. Thank you so much for being on the program tonight. We'll stay in touch, and you stay in touch, and as things develop and new projects come along, we'll want to hear about them. So just know you've got an invitation to come back anytime you want.
I appreciate the curiosity, John. Thanks.
Take care. Well, you know, I wish I could remember everything my dad said, but I remember this. You can have culture in your life and live in a tent. You can live in a mansion and have no culture in your life and no appreciation of it either. It's a zombie jambi week. I'll talk to you again on Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night, and Saturday night. George Norrie's been doing this for 10 years. I've been doing it for 1 year. Thank you for that. I got a feeling by this time next week, it's going to feel like 10 years. Until then and beyond, be well.